Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Yo, what's good? It's Black Trey, and I got a show called Growing Up the Same with Jason Madison, where we talk to guests about their childhood memories that I'm sure everyone can relate to. You even get some life advice at the end. Our show has featured guests like Dom Kennedy, JJ Redick, Baron Davis, Brian Koppelman, Bomani Jones, Mina Kimes, and many more. Be sure to check us out on the Black Opinions Matter feed under the Count the Dings Network. Oh yeah, and don't forget to tell a friend to subscribe, rate, and review.
And also subscribe, rate, and review to the separate Growing Up the Same feed.
Hi everyone, Tim Kitzer here from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. And you're listening to Growing Up the Same with Trayvon Edwards and Jason Madison. Boom shakalaka. And now here's your starting lineup. Trayvon Edwards, Jason Madison. Boom shakalaka.
Today we're joined by a special guest, like a very, very special guest. Also, it is our year anniversary, so this is definitely a special episode. We have the beautiful Ananda Lewis. How you doing?
Hi guys. What's up, Trayvon? What's up, Jason? How y'all?
We're great.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
It's a great way to spend it.
That's crazy. Y'all started this in the middle of a pandemic.
I know. And we've been rocking pretty tough. So I'm glad that, you know, this is how we're spending our first years. It's a good way to spend it. So let me introduce you. Ananda Lewis is an American television host, carpenter, former model, and social activist. She was an MTV VJ from the late 90s until 2001. She left the network to host her own broadcast syndicated television talk show, The Ananda Lewis Show. She's a correspondent for The Insider from 2004 to 2005. She then became a carpenter, also hosted the 2019 revival of While You Were Out on TLC.
And now it's time for the one or the two with Jay Skills.
Live show or pre-recorded?
Live.
The 90s or the 2000s?
90s.
Behind the music or ultrasound?
Ooh, behind music.
Ribs or making the video?
Ribs.
Daria or Beavis and Butthead?
I would say Daria for the girl power, but Beavis and Butthead are hilarious. I would say Beavis and Butthead, dummies.
Real World or Road Rules?
Real World.
True Life or Teen Mom?
Ooh, True Life.
The Tom Green Show or Remote Control?
Tom Green, I still have a script from his show. That's crazy.
You have a script from his show?
Yeah. I don't know even how it came to be in my possession. I think I don't even remember how. I don't know, but I have it.
That was my favorite show for a while. I'd never seen nothing that ridiculous when I was a kid.
So stupid.
Yeah.
And funny.
Yes. Diary or Biorhythm?
Diary.
Rock and Jock Softball or Pimp My Ride?
Pimp My Ride, even though I love doing the Rock and Jocks. They were fun. Pimp My Ride's a great show, though.
Yeah, both shows were great. I definitely appreciate the Rock and Jock, though. My Block or Love Line?
I don't know either one of those.
Well, Love Line.
Oh, Love Line was with Dr. Drew?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I do remember that. Love Line.
Punked or Making the Band?
Punked.
Soo Chin Pak or Tech Money?
I love Soo Chin, but Tech is my boy. What's up, Tech? I'm going to choose Tech.
Kurt Loder or John Norris?
Oh, they're both dope. Kurt Loder for the classic nature of Kurt Loder. Yeah.
Carson Daly or Damien?
I gotta go with Carson. We kicked off that Times Square studio together. I gotta stay loyal.
Matt Pinfield or Chris Connolly?
Oh God, another hard choice. They're both dope. Matt Pinfield's brain is the original computer. I'm convinced that they took the idea of the computer from him. So I'm gonna pick Matt.
Sway or Fab Five Freddy?
Oh man, Sway.
Bill Bellamy or DJ Clue?
Y'all are killing me, Bellamy. Bellamy, we did my first actual shoot at MTV was with Bill Bellamy, Matt Pinfield, I think Carson, and Serena Alchul. We sat in the top of the little hot noodle cup on the top of the Times Square thing. It was like the first promo of me being there, and it was with all of them. It was so much fun. I remember. Yeah. I still have a picture, like a behind the scenes picture of that shoot. Where is it? I don't know. But yeah, I'm gonna pick Bill Bellamy.
No. The Cut or Artist Cut or Say What Karaoke?
Ooh. Wait, The Cut with Left Eye?
Yeah.
Yes.
12 Angry Viewers or MTV Live?
Oh, I love doing both of those shows. I would say Live was more exciting because of the nature of being live. I'll pick Live. Although 12 Angry Viewers was fun.
Yeah, I just want to like break into this segment, which I don't normally do, but I want to say like 12 Angry Viewers was when I originally got hooked on MTV. So like I was like a Nickelodeon kid. And then like, you know, most kids made their transition from like watching Nickelodeon to watching MTV. And so you were doing one episode of 12 Angry Viewers and you were showing the Daft Punk Around the World video.
Yes.
And that video was so dope to me. I was like, what is this? Like, and the show format was cool. And I, you know, every viewer got like five grade on a scale of 1 to 5, all of that. And I was like, this is tight. And then I just would not stop watching MTV after that. But I remember that being like the seminal moment, me seeing that video.
Oh, that's so cool.
Spring Break or Summer Beach House?
Oh, that's another hard one. Oh my gosh, we tear them places down. I would say, for the Bahamas 99, because that was a magical summer. I'm going to say summer. So like whatever we called it, summer house, whatever.
What was so magical about the Bahamas 99 summer?
I'm really an island. I think I'm from the islands originally, but you know, my people shifted before I was born, but I have a connection to islands. Just, I feel it in my whole being. And being in the Bahamas for 3 months. I mean, just that environment and everybody who came through, from Dave Chappelle to Britney Spears. We had that huge show with, of course, I can't remember their names. The Nookie, Limp Bizkit, had the whole huge show where they blew the thing. I mean, it was like the craziest summer I'd ever had. And I think, I mean, SoCal summer was fun too. The next year, 2000 in San Diego, and since that's my hometown, I had a great time there. But the Bahamas was wild, and we stayed at the Atlantis Hotel. So just being in that whole environment for that long, 3 whole months, was really, really cool. And my dad came and stayed with me for part of it. It was great. I had a lot of family come down, and it was the first time I was like, I could really live on the island. I could just stay here.
Run's house or the Osbournes?
Run's house.
Undressed or Jackass?
I don't know what Undressed is, so I'm gonna say Jackass.
Undressed was like, it was like a late night show that they had on MTV, like late 90s, like early 2000s. It was like they were dealing with like gay and lesbian things, and it was like a scripted show. It was like really, like, definitely not for kids, but
It was late night.
Yeah, it was like some 11:30, like, you know, on like halfway nudity, all that.
After prime time. I never saw that. But I also, you know, it's funny, I spent so many years on MTV, but I didn't even have cable. Like, I wasn't watching MTV while I was on it. I mean, I was working so much, there wouldn't have been any time for me to go home and then watch TV, but I also wasn't going home and watching TV. Like, I just spent all day making TV. I want to go home and do something else. So that's so funny, because there's so many things that happen I really didn't see. If I wasn't there hosting it, I didn't really know about it.
Oh, wow. That's dope.
Yeah, though. Nature of the beast.
Yeah. The Lyricist Lounge Show or Doggy Fizzle Televizzle?
Doggy Fizzle Televizzle. Although the few times that I was aware of the Lyricist Lounge Show, that was pretty dope.
Yeah, it was.
But I loved
it. They canceled that show. I feel like they had more burn. The VMAs from the 90 to 95 or 95 to 2000?
95 to 2000, baby.
Yeah. That was when we got the Lil' Kim. Did we get the Lil' Kim nipple in like 99 or something like that?
We did. I think that was, 98, 99. I think Aaliyah and I presented an award in the 2001. That was like the year before she passed. It was a lot. 95 to 2000 was, I mean, that window is crazy. And it's so weird how, like, I literally just caught that window. I literally got on Teen Summit in 95, and I went to MTV in 97, and then I left MTV in 2001. It was like that whole span was all me.
Amazing. Crazy. That was the best time.
Yeah, I agree.
Too many emails or too many texts?
Too many texts.
Fruits or veggies?
It's a hard one. I like fruits better.
Yeah.
But veggies are better for you. So I'm gonna pick fruits, because I'm gonna go with what I like.
Right. Trees or flowers?
Trees. They do more for us.
Yeah. Shower or bath?
I love a good bath, but it has to be the right tub. Right. Like, if the tub is whack, forget it. I'm in the shower.
For sure.
But I would like baths, so bath.
One in a million or 4-page letter?
Ooh. Oh. 4-page letter.
Yeah.
Classic Aaliyah. 4-page letter.
Ready to die or life after death?
Ready to die.
Inner visions or talking book?
Inner visions.
Bad or Thriller?
Thriller.
The College Dropout or Graduation?
Oh, man. College Dropout.
Yeah. Pharrell or Timbaland?
That's too hard of a choice. And they work so well together. I'm taking them both.
Chris Rock or Eddie Murphy?
Oh, come on. What you trying to do, Jason? Oh, Eddie for the class. I literally just watched Raw again like 2 weeks ago. That is so classic. And there would be no Chris Rock without Eddie. So I'm going to choose Eddie. although yeah. Chris is amazing.
He always trying to start problems, don't worry.
Always.
That's what he do.
Troublemaker, you a troublemaker.
Sure. How high or half baked?
I actually didn't see either one.
Oh, wow. Well, you should check them out when you get a chance. Cash Money or Bad Boy?
Bad Boy.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Jay-Z or Tupac?
Busta Rhymes. No. Tupac.
Yeah, that actually in that MTV era is when Busta Rhymes was killing it, when he came out with that dangerous video.
I mean, his videos were like unreal though.
Crazy. Yeah. He changed the game.
Yeah, and it's crazy like how we like look now, you know, obviously with like DMX passing away, we have a little moment to reflect on that era a little bit and
right.
You know, remember who was really running things, but people forget how big Busta Rhymes was at that time.
I don't think they do. I think they're real clear. Yeah. And now I think his 30 years of doing music, like maybe what's the first group he was with? What's the name of the three guys?
Slipmo Squad.
No, the oh, original group.
Oh, the original.
Leaders of the New School?
Yes, Leaders of the New School. Yeah, they're, yeah. The anniversary of that first music they put out was 30 years ago this month.
Yeah.
And he just put a new album out. Like, all the other people in that same era, they're pretty much done putting music out. He's still putting out fire. It's like stupid. I'm like, what are you? You're inhuman. It's crazy.
Yeah, the fact that he went... had a whole thing with Dre and like, yeah, he's had an amazing career.
Yeah, amazing.
LA and New York.
So LA.
A Peloton or a bike ride?
I've never been on a Peloton. I hear great things about them, but I like being out in the air when I ride. So I'm gonna say bike ride because we got, you know, the boardwalk here and the beach. I can go riding at the ocean. So I'd rather do that.
I don't get no stock for Peloton, but it's great.
I hear amazing things about it. Yeah, they're going to have to give me some stock to say any more about them, though. No.
We need a Peloton sponsorship on the podcast. We need them to sponsor.
That's a good idea.
Elephants or giraffes?
Oh, I love them both. I'm going to say elephants.
Soulja Boy or Bow Wow?
Bow Wow.
Keith Sweat or Bobby Brown?
That was a hell of a show.
Yeah.
Wow. Bobby got so many dang hits. I'm gonna go with Bobby.
Yeah.
But Keith Sweat is keeping himself together, right?
No, he is. He is for sure. Alanis Morissette or Sheryl Crow?
Alanis. I don't care who else you say. I don't even know who the second person was. It's always gonna be Alanis. I'm like one of the number one fans of hers.
Yeah.
Especially back then. Yeah.
Oh yeah. That Jagged Little Pill was killing me.
I still play it.
Yeah.
And it holds up the entire album.
All right. NSYNC or Backstreet Boys?
Really love them both. I'm gonna go with Backstreet Boys are about to do another tour, huh?
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with NSYNC just because I had more relationships like people I knew in the group, so
yeah. The Wood or Crooklyn?
Didn't see either one. How crazy is that?
Hey, you might ask, listen. I don't know how much time you got, but you can watch them too. And then it was something else that you ain't peeped. But
yeah, no, yeah. It was How High and Half Baked.
Oh yeah, you gotta watch.
You gotta see How High though for sure. Half Baked, like you, I mean, this is
we're not even gonna steer you wrong.
Yeah.
Miss you.
Wait, it's so good. How I'm writing it down. How High, Half Baked, and what are the two that just came up? The Wood?
And Crooklyn. Yeah.
I think
okay. I'm really not a movie person. I don't watch a lot of movies, which is probably why I didn't ever see those. I'm really picky when I watch movies. I really have to want to see it. And if it gets too silly, I'm done. So right. I'll watch them though. I'll watch them.
We might lose you on How High.
Yeah. How High is a silly ass movie. So
it's silly, but it's yeah.
It would have had to been 97 for me to find it funny. Okay.
Yeah. Crystals or candles?
Crystals. Candles are horrible to burn in your house, no matter what kind they are, because of the butane, whatever gives off. Yeah, not supposed to burn stuff.
Heels or wedges?
Heels are sexier, but wedges you can actually wear and not, you know, be in pain and hunched over somewhere at the end of the night. I wear more heels.
Okay, what about this one? Heels or tennis shoes?
Oh, always tennis shoes. I'm going for comfort.
All right,
comfort,
cool, but that's not see? Even the same. There we
that's
go.
That's incomparable. It's not even the same.
I'm only hating because I don't like wedges. Yeah, I'll be hating on wedges. No, really? They look crazy. I'm not even smart. That's the thing. I don't even speak on women's fashion. Like, shout out to that. Stop. But when I see wedges, oh my! It reminds me of like that teacher, or like the cafeteria lady that just like she's
you
on
had
her
a
feet
bad
all day.
With
yeah,
wedges.
It's all bad. Yo. Can't do the wedges.
Wait, you talking about the platforms?
Like the little joints that be up and then it kind of go down. Yeah, like, yeah, those are very ungood.
They're so comfortable. Very ungood.
Yeah. Scrambled eggs or fried eggs?
Ooh, scrambled.
Mexican food or Italian?
Mexican. I'm Westside California. That's all I love.
Yeah, and San Diego. So y'all got the bomb carne asada fries out there.
Yes. Oh my gosh. The best California burritos, we got the best Mexican food, period, of anywhere.
I don't even eat Mexican food here in New York. I'm so sad.
It's not Mexican food. It's like El Salvadorian.
I'm from Compton. So like, I know, I'm listening.
You know,
I'm only messing. First of all, I don't like cheese on my tacos. Like, give me
like the street tacos.
Street tacos, with the onions and the cilantro.
Yep. Cilantro, yep.
Yeah.
Woo, quit making me hungry.
All right. 3 p.m. or 3 a.m.?
3 a.m.
Cheeseburger or cheese pizza?
Cheese pizza.
And then the last one, BET or MTV?
Oh, no. You're not gonna make me.
He's a sicko.
I will not be fighting people in these streets. We just got out the house. I'm too, like, both. I love them both.
There you go.
For different reasons.
Right, right. Well, that was the one of the two. You did an amazing job.
That was fun.
See, James.
Little James show.
You know what I hate? After a long day of work, dealing with people, being stressed, got to figure out what to eat that night. I don't feel like cooking, but I don't want to eat something that's bad for me like junk food. I want something healthy. I want to eat something that tastes good, and I don't want to work too hard or pay too much to do it. Well, guess what? What you really want, if you're like me, is Freshly. That's right. Freshly offers chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals delivered fresh to your door. No cooking required. Grocery shopping and cooking can be a pain, especially right now. And with Freshly, you don't have to. Your meals arrive cooked and fresh every week, so you can keep your fridge stocked and skip the trip to the store. Ordering is easy. All you got to do is visit Freshly.com and choose from over 30 delicious, satisfying, better-for-you meals like steak peppercorn, sausage baked penne, or their chicken pesto bowl. I love the chicken pesto bowl! Freshly can fit your lifestyle with a variety of plans and meals to pick from that work for your dietary needs, preferences, tastes, and family size. Now our listeners can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Stop searching the internet for healthy food near me every night and start living life Freshly. Your meals are always delivered fresh, never frozen, and are ready to heat and enjoy in just 3 minutes. With new meals added each week, Freshly brings the convenience of chef-made, nutritionist-designed classics right to your kitchen. Right now, Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to freshly.com/BOM. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to freshly.com/BOM for $40 off your first two orders. That's freshly.com/BOM for $40 off your first two orders. Do yourself a favor. Get Freshly.
Jason hates when I say it, but he has the fun part of the pod. Like, the whole pod is fun, but you're like, think about like when you're like warming up, like the show, mm-hmm. like he can steal the show. He literally could turn that into one part of the show and we could
right.
just say, all
right. Like the whole, and you're like, okay. Good.
Yeah. Cause sometimes the answers are long and people like the elaborate. There, yeah. Yeah. No, he gets it going straight up.
That's fun. Nice.
So I really want to jump into young Ananda being an insect hunter. Tell us about that.
Man, I was a weird kid. Like, I look back and go, if my son was doing stuff like this, actually, I'd be teaching him how to do stuff like this, so I can't judge it. So my grandmother raised me predominantly. She had a really beautiful house my grandfather built back in the 40s. And had this huge yard, four levels of a yard, like huge yard, big living room. And the entire living room was filled with plants. My grandma loved plants and she would smuggle plants from places. And I mean, there were plants everywhere. And in these plants were bugs. I mean, you know, there were a bunch of spiders and her spiders. She never vacuumed up the spiders. She just let them live. And so there'd be these huge, really thick spider webs, both inside and outside. And of course the ones outside were bigger, but we had them inside too. And so in the summertime, when all these flies would start coming up, you know, I would take a fly swatter, and I don't even know how this happened for the first time in me discovering it, but I would hit a fly like a light hit, not try to smash him. I would hit him till he was like stunned and he was still able to move his wings. I'd pick him up by the wings with my hands, because I was never scared of like bugs, and I was fine with all that stuff. I would catch lizards and stuff and drop him in a spider web and sit there and watch the spider come stalk him and eat him. And I did it. It was like my summer hobby.
So were you not scared of spiders at all?
I mean, I didn't want them on me, but I wasn't scared of them just looking at them or having them be right there. I'm still not afraid of spiders. I don't want them in my house, but I have a tendency, and maybe it's because of being raised with all these, you know, different animals and bugs around and plants around. I communicate and talk to all those things like out loud. And so if a spider comes in my house, I go, listen, I'm gonna give you a chance to get out of here. I will reason with him. Like, this is not where you belong. I had to kill some of your cousins. It's not safe for you in here. If you stay, you're gonna have a problem. I'm gonna give you a chance to go. I'm also one of those people who will get a cup and a piece of paper and get them under the cup and let them outside. But after a few times of trying with them, if they're not listening, then I vacuum them up. So, you know, and I had a scorpion come into the house I was staying at in Arizona a while back, and I didn't even give him a chance. We don't give, if you could kill me, you don't get a chance.
I like those rules. I was a school teacher in Arizona for 6 years. And
you know about the brown bark scorpions.
I know about all them insects, but I also taught, you know, about insects and plants. So most of the time I taught the life cycle, and I would tell them, like, you know, consider these bugs like with life. You know what I mean? We wanted them to appreciate life. And I taught first through third grade. So I would have them. We had a bug keeper, and what the bug keeper would do, if it was a bug, it would sweep them into a little dustpan and they would free them and let them out. So we didn't take no lives at all.
Good.
And I just kind of like made sure we doubled down on that. So it was like, that thing, because it was so easy to step on them or just get that thing. But like when you said that, it resonated of, you know, how I taught the children to how to handle bugs.
It's so important to teach them at that age to do no harm. We have this really messed up idea, some human beings do, that we are supposed to dominate and be superior and everything's under our domain. And you know, to me, that's very European way of looking at the world. Like, I'm dominant over everything and everything has to conform to me. That's how we were stolen from our homeland. That's how the other part of my family had their land taken, the Native Americans. That's how, like, there's too much evidence that that is the worst way to be a human being, right? That's the worst way to think as a human being. It's the worst way for you and for everything around you and for the planet that we live on. Like, that is the wrong way to think. And so if we can acknowledge that that's the wrong way to think, we have to start undoing that thinking, creating new thinking and setting a new standard of how we're going to exist on this planet, because the planet is not going to tolerate our existence on her for much longer if we keep messing everything up the way we are. And we don't have to. It's everything is a choice. It will be inconvenient for us to start to shift into other, you know, fuel sources and all of that. But we created the problem. So we have to be inconvenienced for the solution. And we got to get real clear and comfortable with that. So I'm happy to hear that, because I always, you know, it's always been a thing for me, but it's definitely not how most people think. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Listen,
I was in Portland last weekend, and talk about the planet not wanting us to be on her anymore. It was 115 degrees in Portland.
Portland?
Yes, which was the hottest it had ever been there on record.
Like in history, yeah.
In history of the world. Like, could not believe it. So yeah, so if we don't start, you know, and like everybody's seen that Gulf of Mexico video with the ocean on fire, like if we don't start
three are on fire.
Three rigs?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all bad. Bad out here. It ain't, you know what I mean? We ain't living right out here.
The problem is it's all based on our desire to make things convenient and comfortable for us without any consideration of how that diminishes the comfort and the ability to live of everything around us and eventually us, because we don't see because some of us do see it, because the people in charge of those kind of things don't see us as connected to this greater process. They are not able to acknowledge the detriment that we are creating to the greater process. It's so isolated and like, oh, well, this is fake science, or this is going to be, no, everything is connected. You and the spider, and so I wasn't just killing flies like for the sake of, I'm a squash fly. I was actually feeding the life cycle is how I justified it in my mind. I was like, listen, I'm just helping the spider catch the fly. I didn't like kill him. The spider killed him. But there is a natural order to things that is bigger than us, that will always win. Like, you're not gonna win this battle.
Exactly.
You're not gonna win the battle against the planet.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah. We gotta get it together, all the way together. And I don't know if we will.
Yeah, so. we all come from God, and we will all return there one day.
Right. That's right. And we'll have to face what we have done.
Yeah, you're gonna have to reconcile whatever you did.
Right.
That's right.
In between time. So,
right.
So what's your connection with carpentry?
My grandma, I was an obnoxious, I'm telling you, I was a very odd child. I would jump on things. Like, there was this concrete bench in my grandma's backyard that had, you know, those old concrete benches you could like build at Home Depot, and you get the two little legs and then the little top that would go on it. She had one of those, and I moved the legs as far to the edges as I could. And she told me this, because I don't even remember. I remember breaking it, but I remember like having a plan to break it. She said that every day I would get up and spend at least 20 minutes jumping on that bench, trying to break it. And eventually I broke it. And she said, she realized in that moment that I was destructive as hell, and that she was going to have to, you know, put something in place to help me kind of deal with lessening my destructive nature. And so she said, everything you break in this house, you're going to have to fix it, because I'm not replacing it. And if you broke it, it's your responsibility. And I was like, how am I going to fix concrete? She said, concrete doesn't count, because I can't fix concrete. But when I broke the wooden table, she took out her power drill, because my grandma was very much hands-on, do it herself. She would ask for help. She didn't, you know, she wasn't opposed to asking for help, but she just could do a lot. So she did. And she took out her power drill. She gave me a screw. She showed me how it needed to connect to hold and go back in. And she made me fix it. And every single time I broke something, that was the case. When I ripped things, she taught me how to sew them on a sewing machine. Like, she made me learn how to fix everything I broke, which gave me skills that I, you know, you don't understand that as a kid. There's skills now. Like, literally, I can hem my own pants and make bags from scratch and do whatever I want on a sewing machine, pretty much. I can't make like full outfits yet, but I'm working on it. And it gave me a love of fixing things. So I didn't even know carpentry was a career or a category of anything at that age. But as I grew older, tools were always kind of like my comfort blanket. And so I loved my career, loved being at BET, had a great time at MTV. When I got to the talk show, it was really overwhelming and not at all what I expected it to be. And I was really kind of depressed during that time and pissed off a lot. Like, things were going on that were not in my control, but I thought they should be. And things were going on a show with my name on it that I didn't condone. It was like just a whole lot of, so there was a 24-hour Home Depot in Jersey where I lived. And when I would be really stressed out coming home from work, I would go to that Home Depot and just walk around the tool section, because tools have always calmed me down and given me like peace and comfort and excitement too, like imagining what I could do with these tools. So I don't know, my whole life from that time with my grandmother, I just really have always been able to be free with what I liked. So I never had the idea like, oh, I'm a girl, so I shouldn't be using the tools, or like, this isn't my lane because I'm a woman. I never bought into that. I didn't have a family that taught me that, so I didn't learn it. I always knew, hey, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. And carpentry was one of those things that I was just always like, I want to know it better. I can build things, but not as well as I want to be able to build things. I was always this longing to increase my knowledge in that area. So when I got really, like the third time I got really sick of TV after I had gone home to take care of my grandma, and then she passed away, and I moved back to LA, and was kind of in between. I was doing radio in LA, which was fun. And I was working for The Insider, which was great, but I didn't like love it. I'm not a gossiper, and I don't know, talking about people, it wasn't really what I do. So I was doing it, but when I realized really what I had to do, I was like, yeah, this probably isn't for me. And what else do I want to do? And I had this longing for carpentry. Well, there was this kind of window of time where I stopped doing The Insider and I'd stopped doing radio, and I was about to start another job. And I was like, this is a moment where I can do whatever I want. Like, I'm not on contract with anybody. Nobody can tell me I can't go do what I want to do right now. And there had been about 10 years of me being on contracts with various people where, you know, if you're on contract, you can't do anything. You are theirs until the contract ends or they can sue you. And, you know, me giving my word is an important thing to me. So I wouldn't just bail on a contract, even if I really felt like it. So I had this window and I was like, oh no, no. I was doing shelves in my house that I lived in at the time, trying to make a shoe rack, and I couldn't make the edges fit. I wanted to make it real tight. And I got so frustrated. I was like, somebody has to be able to teach me how to do this. I had chop saws. I had all these tools, and I was like barely proficient with using them. So I got online and I found Trade Tech, like did a bunch of searches, and I ended up finding LA Trade Tech, and they had classes where they would show you how to do, you know, certain things. So I was like, I'm signing up for that. And the more classes I signed up for, I was like, dang, I want to take this one too. I want to learn that. I got to
say, we could have been classmates. You know, the first day of school. Trade Tech?
08 to 2010. I got my degree in 2010.
So I probably would have missed that window, but
Were you at Trade Tech?
So this thing, I was playing basketball. I ended up going to Texas Southern to play ball, but I came home and I was like, oh, I'm cool in basketball. So I was at home just hanging out in the hood. And I was like, somebody stopped me and was like, yo, you out here, you gonna waste your life, like not doing nothing. You need to go get you a trade. So I started looking up at Trade Tech because I knew like, I could learn anything over there. And I almost signed up, but I got recruited by another school. And
we would have been on campus like, what's up? You've been in what? What would you have done? Plumbing, electrical? What were you going to do?
At the time, I think it was plumbing, because at first, you know, obviously as kids, you always joke around, but plumbers always are employed. They make so much money. I just think that, you know, it just needs to be more representation of that job on the positive side. But yeah, like I definitely that. So yeah, I was looking into plumbing for sure.
I like all of that. I wanted to go back and take plumbing because we were right catacorner to the plumbing school. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to be over there too. I wanted to learn. Only thing I didn't want to learn is electrical. I wanted to go back for a welding class.
But I wanted to actually be a Black Mario Brother though. I was gonna wear, but I was going to wear some sick ass overalls. Like they would have been some fire.
Crisscross overalls.
Yeah, and they would have been like zebra print or something like that. I would have been looking like a big snack. You feel me?
Hey, it's crazy because today is my grandfather's birthday, and you were telling the story about your grandmother and like how you learned a lot of like your carpentry stuff from her. My grandfather actually went to LA Trade Tech and became a carpenter. He had like
what?
Yeah, he worked at the bank, at like Bank of America for like 30, 40 years, and then like decided he was going to like go into carpentry because he had owned like his house and some other properties. So he wanted to like fix them up and do all this stuff.
Yeah, not waste money on those renovations, getting gypped.
And working at the bank, he was just very like sound with his financial decisions always. So he's like, yeah, why would I pay somebody else to do it? I could learn how to do that. So he went to trade tech and learned how to become a carpenter. And actually, when we get off of this podcast, I'm going to go take him out to dinner for his birthday.
Oh, tell him happy birthday. That's so sweet. Shout out to your grandpa. You're taking him out to dinner. I wish my grandma, man, I miss her so bad. You just take full advantage of the time with them. Sure. I'm so glad I did. Like, that's the one thing I know I'll never regret. I gave up a career. I left. I know I did. And I burned bridges that I burned because I wasn't aware of how to leave without just being like, y'all, I'm out. You know I could have handled that differently. But the part I will never regret is leaving it all for her. Yeah. I would do that every single time it came up as an option. I would take it. It was the best thing I ever did.
100%.
Yeah.
So, oh, go ahead, Jason.
No, I was just saying, yeah, sometimes you got to make the right decision, even if it's not in the right way. Like,
that's right.
I think about that all the time.
Right ain't always popular.
I think about that all the time. I'm not going to lie. Because I was raised by my great grandma as well. And in the time I was going playing ball and she ended up passing, like, I didn't want to finish college. Mm-hmm. It just was like, I felt so much guilt. And it's always weird because, like, the timing, especially when somebody passes and you see them, you feel like that last time you seen them was like coincidental, like it was lined up that way.
Yeah.
You're like, dang, like I wish I would have had more time, you know, specifically. And I actually just recently lost my uncle a couple of days ago, and I FaceTimed him on Sunday. So for me to like have that conversation and then he's gone like 2 days later, it just was like, what? Like, nah, y'all quit playing with me. And it was, you know, and you never know. So
never know.
I try to be more mindful. Obviously, I'm working like a madman, but like, right. I've also told myself, like,
hello, listener. Have you ever used ButcherBox? I don't know if you know this about me, but I used to be a butcher. I used to work at an unnamed grocery store. I used to be that tall man behind the counter in your neighborhood, cutting up meat and preparing seafood for you. And I know that it can be a stressful situation. I know that it can be crowded. You have to wait your turn. You have to know what you want. You feel rushed. Sometimes you might think that your butcher has a bad attitude. I don't know. Happened to a friend. Couldn't possibly be me. But that's why I love ButcherBox. ButcherBox brings you peace of mind. You can easily find high quality beef, chicken, pork that you can trust is humanely raised. There's no antibiotics or added hormones. There's the ultimate convenience of not having to deal with butchers or the crowded meat counter after a long day at work. It's delivered right to your doorstep. There's always free shipping and there's incredible value. You're getting really high quality products at an amazing value. You get exclusive member deals. You get recipe inspiration, guides, hacks. A little hack from my butcher experience, the petite top sirloin, which is about half the price of the New York steak, is a very similar cut. With a fat cap on one side, and you get very good tenderness out of the petite sirloin. If you've ever been to a Brazilian steakhouse and you see them talking about picanha, that's the petite sirloin. With ButcherBox, I'm always prepared. I always have meat on deck for a grill and chill, a cookout, or just making dinner at home. And I'm saving a ton of money from shopping at the grocery store all the time. Now, I know what you're thinking. That's great, but what's my reward for signing up for ButcherBox? Well, I'm glad you asked, because if you sign up at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, you will get free ground beef for life. For life. Enough ground beef to fill the Nile, plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/dings.
Be with family, too. Like, yeah. Don't get so locked into your career, you know? So, this is an important conversation. We went into the deep side through carpentry.
Right. Look where it leads.
Look where it leads.
Look how it connects everybody. Carpentry connects everybody.
See? Carpentry is life.
It is. The building block, literally the fundamental things about carpentry, the things that I learned translate so perfectly to life lessons. It just does. It you know, maybe that's why Jesus was a carpenter, at least how it, you know, wrote it in the Bible. Maybe that's why, because there are so many things that just line up perfectly that you can learn from. That I sat in the class even listening to, you know, my various teachers and stuff. And I'm like, wow, that's like a life lesson you just said, you know, it's talking yeah. something about how to get the screw in right, not break. It's like, wow, that's a life lesson. But there's so many things. Let me say this about taking care of older people, that, you know, in all of our cases, it sounds like we had really beautiful relationships with our grandparents. And those grandparents, I know for me, my grandmother is the reason that I'm still here. She took over for, you know, my mom at a time where she couldn't handle being a parent and needed a break, and rightfully so with everything that was going on in her life. And, you know, when someone is there for you like that, even as a grandparent, they don't have to do that. There are plenty of grandparents who don't and who didn't, you know, and who say, no, that's not my kid. I already raised my kids. You better figure it out. And if my grandmother had said that, my sister and I would probably have ended up in foster care or something. Like, the village of the family is a real necessity, right? The village, period, is a real necessity. Ideally, it's your family, but it isn't always your family. But when someone steps up like that for you, you have to give it back.
Yep.
You have to give it back. And it, there's no one way to give it back, but you have to give it back. So keeping in touch with them, checking on them, making sure they have what they need, that's one way to give it back. You know, depending on their level of care that they require, there's ways to give it back. Even if you can't house them yourself and you end up helping to pay for care for them, that's a way to give it back. But we cannot leave our elders hanging. As much as we talk about pride and our people and all this stuff, like, I see a lot of our elders getting left hanging. And yeah. we have to put our money where our mouth is, literally, and make sure that they're okay. My dad lives with me right now. He's 80.
Yeah.
And I don't know how loud I'm being, but I don't want him living with me. Like, I'm sick of my dad living with me. And my dad did not raise me. He was not here for me. The reason my grandmother was there for us is because my dad and my mom were like Splitsville, and he was like deuces. Like, I saw my dad once a year. So I don't even feel like I owe him anything. And he's living with me because I'm not just going to leave him hanging. That's not who I am. He's not going to be 80 and get put out in the street as long as I'm on the planet. And there are a lot of issues that have come up that we have to deal with as, you know, a result of living together, but we just got to deal with those because I'm not going to put them out. And it's like, we gotta step up for our elders, period. Yeah,
if COVID didn't teach the world anything else, it should have taught everybody that, to appreciate you.
It should have, but now we wide back open and they out here on their
and they're like, whatever.
Hey, you went from humble to I'm outside. You feel me?
Squeaky doors, clogged sinks, finicky engines. When things break down around the house, you take care of it. However, when something's off in the bedroom, you just try not to think about it. Nothing. I was just tired. I'm just stressed a little bit. Come on, man. What are you waiting for? Take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/BOM now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/BOM and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to go to GetRoman.com/BOM now. And if you do, you'll get $15 off your first month. It's really time to take care of your ED. And remember, if you get started today, you'll save $15 on your first order of ED treatment.
Before I even jump into the next transition of your relationship with thrift stores, I got to highlight the thrift store in my Beavis and Butthead shirt that our listeners can't see. But
I didn't even realize you had a Beavis and Butthead shirt on when I asked that question.
I had, you know what I mean? So it worked out. They got the holes and stuff. It looked like a moth done got to
me. I love it.
But
classic.
This is very OG and very mocha. But we still go hold it down. Yeah. But it's a great transition to what's your connection with thrift shopping?
I think my connection to everything is through my grandma, like literally all three things that you've said, but she was my childhood. So it makes sense. My grandma was a very thrifty person. She did not spend money on new clothes. She was a great seamstress and she could make things from scratch, which she did for my mom and my aunt when they were little. But by the time my sister and I came to live with her, she was, you know, older and she would still sew, but she wasn't making stuff from like, she was making stuff from scratch for my aunt a little bit still, but she wasn't gonna make our clothes. So what we would do is go to the thrift store and we would get to look and get anything we wanted and she would make it fit, you know, and make it cute and turn it into something a little different than it was when we bought it. And I was in the Little Miss Black San Diego pageant. My grandma said, I begged her to let me do that pageant. I've never done another pageant. Like I'm not into pageants, but for some reason I wanted to do that pageant really badly, probably because there was a cash prize involved. I was always about my money, even as a little kid. So she made my dress from scratch for the Little Miss Black San Diego pageant both years. I won the first year and then I had to give my crown away the second year. In both years, I need gowns. And, you know, she was just always making stuff with her hands. She was always turning something or nothing into something. She was always transforming things, you know. And it reminds me of the alchemist and maybe not turning things into gold necessarily, but transforming things is what we have the power to do. And you see people doing it all the time, but we don't call it what it is, right? My grandma was an alchemist and it was a beautiful thing to witness. And it really set the tone for me in terms of what I knew was possible for me to do and not putting a limit on myself. Now, there were other ways where, you know, she wasn't as proficient, right? But the ways that she was great were amazing. And I really, really drew from those. And she was human, so she wasn't perfect. But thrift stores were my favorite place. I remember we'd pull up to the thrift store and I'd be so excited because you never know what you're going to get. It wasn't like going to like Mervyn's, which was a big department store when I was little. Yeah. It wasn't like going to Mervyn's where you see like racks of all the same things in different colors. Like you knew what you're going to get. You have no idea what's in the thrift store. I mean, a Beavis and Butthead shirt, right? So where are you ever going to find that? You only found one. And if you didn't find it, you wouldn't have got it. I mean, it's like such a surprise every time you find something. I still have clothes that I got from the thrift store, not as a little kid, but as a you know, an adult. I would do thrift stores every city I went to. Like one of my main goals was, where are your thrift stores? I need to see the thrift stores because everybody has different stuff. And it's just so exciting for me. I still love thrift stores.
Yeah, when I went to
New York. And now they're all, you know, popular, but I've been in them since I was little.
Yeah.
When I went to New York, I was thrift store hunting hard. It was like 2011, 2012. Mm. And, I mean, it was kind of popular at that time, but
yeah,
obviously not to the level it is today, but it was so many different little cut stores in New York, because in LA, all of the thrift stores are kind of still on like the main thoroughfare, you know, it's all everywhere. So, but it's good stuff in LA because we have so many different styles of like people come from all over.
They overcharge though. A lot of those places overcharge now.
LA thrift stores is that they're going to charge you $120 for that Beavis and Butthead t-shirt. So
like the whole point is it's a thrift store.
I'm going to sell it back.
Right.
If need be. But like,
let me find out you're going to flip thrift store clothes.
Hey, it's a market now. I mean,
what
I like
you got to do.
My main thing now though, I love finding old shirts that fit well. Like if it's a good collar or like the material is like
very, dress shirts.
If it's very 90-ish and like it gives me that nostalgia feel of when I like wore it back then, like, cause you can't repeat that. Like the shirts were a bit wider, they're longer.
Yeah.
You know what
cut
I mean?
Was different. The blend of the fabrics was different.
Everything. So when you it's hard to replicate that in 2021. Yeah, so
it is.
When I just look at stuff, but I also don't have the patience for thrift shopping.
It does take patience.
My friend Midea, she could do that all day. Like I will go with you and I'll look through some shit and I'm like,
I have a friend named Mireya. You have a Mireya?
Yeah. She's a chiropractor.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's dope.
Out in Long Beach. So listeners, y'all check that out.
Long Beach chiropractor Mireya.
There you go.
And shout out to The Alchemist real quick, because that's my favorite book of all time.
That's a good book.
It's a fantastic book. So much.
We over here talking about nostalgia. See, I got Pogs next to me.
Oh my God.
I got Simpson figurines. It's just a lot going on over here.
Oh,
It's very, very, very fitting for that conversation. You mentioned before we started recording about being a latchkey kid. I don't think a lot of people know what that term is. Latchkey. How was your latchkey experience?
Well, one time I almost burnt down the apartment. I was trying to make a candle holder by melting wax and forming it into a candle holder. But of course, at 9 years old, or maybe I was 8, I had no idea what I was doing. And there was nobody home but me and my 10-year-old or 11-year-old at that time sister. And she didn't mess with me. I was like the little irritating sister, and we used to always fight. So I would just be out in the room. She'd be back in the room, you know, being separate parts of the apartment. And I was in the kitchen in a little toaster oven. I put two of my mom's long candles in the toaster oven on that little tray and turned it up to 350 and left it on for like 20, 30 minutes. When I came back, it was just liquid. It looked like water in the little pan. And this is dumb little kid, right? Nobody taught me how to do stuff. Well, my grandma taught me how to cook a little, but we had gotten kicked out of my grandma's house because my mother did. And we were living on our own. And so there was no supervision. And I took my bare hand and grabbed the tray. And to this day, it takes me a minute to register being burned or being hurt. Like, it's just a delayed reaction. My body has like a high tolerance for things. So it's like, it took about 3 seconds of me having it in my hand. And I was like, and then I dropped it and all the wax spilled on this hand and just, I had a third degree blister burn with a bubble that like separated my fingers like this. It was so wide. It was, my whole hand was just, it was crazy. And that's not when I almost burned the house down. That was when I burnt myself. I almost burned the house down trying to toast something in there. I left it in there for 45 minutes and it caught on fire. It was like a Hot Pocket or something. My mom didn't do a microwave. So I think it was like a hot, but anyway, whatever it was, it got, you know, too hot and literally burst into flames. And so the thing was on fire when I went in there, and then it started smoking up to the top of the, cause you know, the toaster was right under the cabinets, genius. And it caught on fire in the top of the toaster, with the heat element caught on fire. And then that started going up the things, and I was just hitting it, throwing water on it. And it finally went down, but the whole cabinet was black. And my mom got home, was like, I could hide what happened. But I had a lot of mishaps and I'll go back to answer your question. Technically, Trey, a latchkey kid is a child who comes home and is alone, basically. Latchkey, and I don't know where the latch part comes from, but basically you have a key to wherever you live with whatever parent or guardian you live with, and you let yourself in, and then you're home alone until your parent or guardian comes back. So for me and my sister, that was like, we take the bus home from school. So about 3 o'clock, 3:15, 3:30, we get home. Gilligan's Island would be on. I was like, that's how I knew what time it was. I used to tell time by shows. and when good times would come on, I knew it was 7 o'clock. But Gilligan's Island would be on. We would come in the house, unlock the door. You'd have the rules. You got to lock the door, put the thing on the door, like make sure you're safe. And then you're home. You're home for 4 or 5 hours by yourself. And that's latchkey kids. Now I'm really lucky and fortunate that I had my sister, even though we fought a lot. I'm glad I wasn't by myself being a latchkey kid, but a lot of my friends were solo latchkey kids, and that's a whole nother experience.
So that's me.
You were the solo latchkey kid. Yeah.
So at 7, I walked home, obviously different time. I walked home. My grandma was actually, she cleaned houses, and she cleaned house for Aaron Spelling back in the day.
Oh, wow.
So she would get home at 5 p.m. Think about that. I've been at school from 8 to 3, and I walk home. I lived around the corner from like the private school I went to. So I had this written note. They knew. And like, okay, is grandma allowing? I walk home from 3:30 to
5:30.
Five, she get there. I can hear a car, whatever, when it's pulling up. And it was the same rules. Lock the door. Don't let nobody in. I had Kid Cuisine, TV dinners. I had Gordon Fisherman fish sticks. I had you know, all the microwavable stuff. And the rule was you can't have company, but I would sneak people in.
All the time.
All the time.
I wasn't that bold till I got older.
I mean, no, I just was doing it because I was by myself, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, I don't want to be alone. And I would look at it like this: the kid's not gonna do nothing. like how it is now, it's a little different because it's just creepy people. It's just like the kids are way more experienced and a lot of stuff. But at that time, I lost my dad when I was 9. My mom was in and out of jail. So like at the particular time, I was spoiled. That was the way to like, hey, everything will be all right.
Those traumas.
Yeah. So I had all the video games, everything. But I'm not gonna play it by myself. Right. So it's all these kids in the neighborhood. They know I got it when my grandma there, like on the weekend, she was like, you can have company. So they knew what was inside the crib. Oh. So they like, yo,
Trey, you trying to play? Come over.
Sega, Super. And I would play the game and slide the door. I used to have my, the room I had was a den. And I would slide the door.
Oh, it had a pocket door.
So they can come and watch me play the new games that I got.
Wow.
So, and I would move the TV closer and put the controller through the thing. That's how we would play. And
but they weren't technically in the house.
So they were in the crib, but I would hate it like on some like rainy days. Like, you know, there's certain days, like it just be like, why is this going on?
Yeah.
But to piggyback off what you're saying is like that I can't even imagine a kid now. And then also me learning, like you said, you were almost burning the crib down. I wasn't doing nothing like that. But it got to a point where I was like 10, 11. I'm playing house with girls. And it just got a little bit too extreme from what I was consuming, you know? So from there, like I think the last time I got whooping, I was like 12. Because I just got too tall for my grandma. My grandma was like,
she's like, can't hit you no more.
Yeah, she was at the point of like, she's at the point of like, look, I'm going to just, you know, I can't do this no more. I can't watch you. So at that last time, I think that was probably like the last time I really cried too. Like, yo, you about to like, you don't want to take care of me no more. Like, all right, I'm going to cut my shit out. Cause I'll probably, and I wasn't even big yet, Jason. I'm 6'1" now, but at the time I probably was like 5'7". My grandma like 5'2". But she a little woman, you know? So she like, nah, we ain't going. And also the switch, she used to make me pick out a switch. She had a switch. So when she would only hit my legs. She would only hit my legs.
Mamas might have been sisters.
See, right. they was from Oklahoma, but.
Wait, yours was from Oklahoma too, for real?
Yeah,
Muskogee. My grandma was from Tulsa.
Okay, so yeah.
He survived the massacre. See? Where, what part of Oklahoma? That's crazy.
Muskogee.
What part of Oklahoma?
Muskogee. Yeah, so
I am registered with the Creek tribe in Muskogee, Oklahoma, through my grandfather's people. My grandfather is from Muskogee. The man
we'll tap in later on and we'll see if we actually family.
Hold up. That's crazy. I literally have never met anybody else who knows anybody else from Muskogee or even knows Muskogee.
So here's another thing. In LA, they did a Muskogee LA picnic at some park. And all of them would meet. My grandma was born in 1929. She moved to California with Watts in 1949. Wow. And then they bought a house in 1955, the house in Compton. And that was our house until 2010. She passed in 2010, but.
Yeah, my grandfather is from Oklahoma too.
What?
he's part Choctaw. His mom was Choctaw.
What city?
It's somewhere around Tulsa. I have to ask him when I see him today.
A lot of those tribes are right around Tulsa because it's where the Trail of Tears ended, like right around that area in Oklahoma. And so there are a lot, all the like five great tribes are have some, you know, representation there. That is crazy, y'all. We do need to have a whole separate conversation. We might need to do a little family tree look at. Y'all might be my cousin.
That'd be sick. That'd be pretty dope. Crazy. I'm not going to lie. I ain't going to lie to you. But yeah, that's crazy from there.
So Ananda, I wanted to ask you about Teen Summit. You know, that was big back in the day.
Yeah.
For like Black kids and like, you know, it was pretty groundbreaking at the time. Honestly, like I had never seen nothing like that. Like how did it feel for you like doing it and like, you know, the impact it had on all the Black kids?
You know, it's funny, Jason, and this might be true with a lot of things, but you don't know what you're in while you're in it. Typically, you don't know what it's doing. You're in there doing it. So with Teen Summit, I, again, was a college student, had graduated in like, what, June and auditioned in like July. So I just gotten out of college. No, I auditioned in like August, but I just got out of college. I was doing youth work that I had been doing for years anyhow, because I wanted to be a teacher. I was working with kids a lot. And the kids in my program were the ones that told me what Teen Summit was, because I didn't have cable. I was a broke college. I worked three jobs in college. Like, I did not have money I was giving to a cable company, right? So I didn't know what it was. I knew what BET was, being in other people's houses. And you knew what BET was as part of the culture. So I was familiar with it, but I didn't watch a lot of BET. So I really didn't know what I was walking into. I knew that it was a show that worked with kids. I knew that I'd been working with kids, and I knew I needed a job. Those were like the facts of the time. So, and I had a speech impediment till I was 8. Once I got over that speech impediment, because my mother was smart enough to get me help, I did 3 years of speech therapy, like every day after school. And finally I was able to say S's right and R's and T's and not, you know, stumble over my words. And so once I could really speak, I was always a good reader, but I didn't want to ever read out loud because of how my, you know, language, my speech sounded. When I got over that, I literally would like not shut up. And I'm sure you can tell still to this day, I talk a lot, but that's because I spent so many years feeling ashamed about how I sounded talking. And I kind of felt like I was making it for lost time. Like, I haven't been talking for 8 years, I'm about to talk. And so it made it really easy for me with a show like Teen Summit, because one, I had never read a prompter, but I was a good reader. My mom also put me in speed reading class along with the speech impediment class, the speech therapy. So when I went to the audition, they were rolling this prompter, and you know, it throws a lot of people off, teleprompters. I had no idea. It was super second nature for me. I was like, it's just words. Like, it's like reading, and I'm a speed reader. So I was like, ooh. And working with the kids, I've been doing all summer. I've been doing that since I was 13. So I felt like Teen Summit was this perfect job that was waiting just for me, right? Because everything about it made sense in my life. And when I went to the first audition, they were like, cool, fine. They didn't really say anything, just let me audition and go. And then apparently behind the scenes, my friend Keith Lawson, who had got me the audition, he told me 6 months ago that they didn't want to hire me. BET did not want to hire me. They were like, nobody knows her. They were coming from Lisa Johnson and then Belma Johnson, and they were coming into this kind of new era of hosts that they wanted to find somebody who was known, who had a face and a name recognition, and you know, the people knew to make the show popular. And I was not that. I was just out of college and nobody knew me. And they were like, no, she's good, but no, we need somebody with a name and a face. And there are all these people with names and faces, but those people couldn't do the job like I did. And right. Apparently my audition was so like powerful, it was undeniable. They were like, oh God, we don't want to hire her, but all right. And then yeah. They decided, okay, let's do a double host thing. And that's when the second time they called me and they had me audition with different people, and DeJure was there and we auditioned together. And then, you know, I guess maybe a couple of weeks later, they were like, all right, y'all got it. But it was a fight apparently behind the scenes. Like, they did not want me. I was like, for real.
Right. And that's always the tough part, is that like, wherever you go, it's hard to break in, because they're like, whenever somebody's producing something, they always want a name and somebody who's known, and it's hard right. for somebody to ever break out and become something new, because they don't ever want to give the new person a chance.
Right. And how do you get to be from a new person to the known person if you never have a chance? It's crazy. Exactly. It's like a double-edged sword. But I, you know, I guess I think it was just a matter of, that's what creation had for me. Like, that was supposed to be on my path, and there was nothing that they could do to stop it. Yeah. And then, you know, I stepped into this amazing show that had been worked really hard for by the people that came before me. I know Lisa Johnson worked really hard. She was a producer. She was the original host. She worked hard to bring that show to the level it was at by the time I got there. And Belma and all the people that came before me did too. And, you know, for me, it was brand new. I wasn't aware of all that history and all that hard work they'd done until much later, you know. But while I was there, it was just a fun show. It was like, I'm doing what I've been doing for years, but just on TV. But the TV part kind of messed me up. I got really popular really fast, and I wasn't really ready for that, and I wasn't aware that that would happen. I mean, I guess you never know what's going to happen. Either it happens or it doesn't. But that part freaked me out. That was literally one of the things I disliked the most, like not being able to go places. I remember the first time I was in a store, and my sister lives in Chicago, and I would go visit her a lot. And you know, I'd been visiting her all through college, all through whatever. I could go wherever I wanted, do whatever I wanted. I mean, I was attractive, so that problem with, you know, women know you always got a problem. But other than that kind of problem, I was good. And the first time I visited her after I had gotten on Teen Summit, it was maybe 3 months I had been on. I walked into Target. I'm sure we were at Target or one of them stores, and or CVS or something. And I started talking to her, and these two girls came around the corner real quick, and they were like, "Ananda." And I was shocked because I didn't know nobody but my sister in Chicago. I was like, "Yeah, you know me." And they're like, "Oh my God, any questions?" So I was like, "This is actually happening now." Yeah. That freaked me out. And it was positive in that, you know, they loved the show. They got something out of the show. That show was helping their lives. And so that's why they were excited to see me. But I wasn't prepared for like complete strangers to run up and hug me, for complete strangers to be. And then the element of like male stalkers started. And that was terrifying. That is still terrifying to me, but it was really scary back then because I walk around with security and all this stuff people have to buffer. I don't have any of that. I was literally just me. I'm typically by myself. I'm a real solo person. I like going places by myself. I don't have a problem with it. But I wasn't able to really do that. And so it changed how I could live my life to a certain extent. And that started being problematic for me. I didn't see that as a good thing. I saw that as something I was giving up that I wasn't ready to give up.
Right.
Anonymity.
That's the thing right now that I'm kind of like grateful for being in my space, right? Because again, most people say, "Well, don't you want to do sports on TV?" And I'm like, "No," because at this point, I only get ran up on if it's very sports specific, and I'm on the voice side, so you have to actually hear me talk to be like, "Hey, aren't you?"
Which right.
is perfect for me because it's kind of like, all right, I can move. I can go to the store. I can do all this other stuff. It's only happened one time in New York since I've been here. And I've been like grateful for that. Like only one person has run up on me. But in Vegas during summer league and LA, it didn't happen too. So like the bigger cities, not so much, but if I'm covering that specific team in that area, and it's just like, I couldn't imagine like trying to date or try, like, I couldn't imagine being on a dating app right now. Like somebody gonna screenshot me and pass me around a group chat or something. Like, look at bro.
and the crazy part,
it is so different
about where you were, Ananda, and where the world is today. Like, I look at it like, there were so many barriers of entry into the level of like popularity that somebody on TV would have before social media, I guess we should say. All these different outlets where people can have different millions of followers on different platforms. It was like, if you weren't on a major network or a cable network, like you were pretty much nobody.
So, yeah, that was it.
So
they were like eight networks that you could be on. And so now it's like everybody has a network in their phone that is their own. They can just, it's crazy.
Blow up like that. So for me, like, and just relating this back to my latchkey experience and then like, you know, me growing up watching you on TV, like my mom works for MTA. She would work a double shift pretty much every day. So she would be gone from 10 a.m. to 2 a.m., I think. Yeah, because 2 a.m. And AM was like her 8 hours off. So she would work 16 hours a day, pretty much every day. So I hardly ever saw her. When I did, she was asleep. So basically I like raised myself, you know, and through watching television, you know, so I was watching and watching whatever was on MTV pretty much 24 hours a day. So, you know, for me, it was dope to see you just as a Black person, you know, and like me, telling people I was going to interview, you know, like I had a couple homegirls who were like, "Yeah, like I looked up to her when I was younger. And, you know, like I never seen anybody that looked like me on TV, you know," like, because there was a big representation thing going on now, but that has been going on forever. And it was going on even to a lesser degree or to, a higher degree then.
Because we had less representation.
Exactly. So, you know, to have you on MTV and for you to be, you know, so funny, smart, well-spoken, you know, and just like, you were just so good at your job. It was natural. Like you said, it just came natural to you. It was so good to see that, you know.
Thank you.
So I will ask you, like, what was your favorite aspect of, you know, broadcasting on TV? What was your favorite show? Like, what was your favorite spot to be in when you were doing that?
I always enjoyed the specials. I think that the daily grind of like the same show over and over would, you know, kind of get like boring a little bit. I mean, it was always fun because there was always someone different coming on or something new to talk about. It was never the same thing every day, but the live shows and the specials were really dope. Like getting to do Woodstock 99 and cover that. We are never going to see that many people in one place again. Like that's just, it's never going to happen.
Oh, is that and, that is that the clip with the DMX?
That's a DMX. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shit. I always
interviewed him right before he went out and did his performance at Woodstock. That was, I've seen the clip, but I don't have the clip. So somebody has it. But that, I mean, I really got to be a part of a time that is now, you know, looking back 20 years, a golden era and a historical kind of moment in time for so many people. And there was no way I could have known that. I wasn't, you know, couldn't do that on purpose. I was grateful just to be able to be myself and have that be what people got, right? And I didn't even know that's what people were getting until now. Like I said before, when you're in it, you don't really know what you're doing. You don't know what you're creating. You're just in it doing your job. I was showing up every day on time, doing my best, being myself. I wasn't going in going, I'm going to represent for my people and make sure I'm, you know, I was like, look, I'm going to be me.
Right.
Period. And if you don't like that, you should not hire me, which is what my mantra was at the talk show. I'm like, why did you hire me to do this? You don't want me. You want some version of me that you felt like was controllable. And now you're learning that I am not that. And now you're mad. But I've always been myself. What are you doing? Right. You talked to me before we did this. What are you doing? So, but I'm so grateful that following kind of the path as it laid itself out before me, instead of saying no, because you can always say no, it's still a choice, right? I showed up and did my best. And I'm super grateful looking back all these years later that that was impactful for people and that made a difference to especially my people and people who look like me. And being able to represent us like that was the joy of my life, you know? And it's something that I still feel like I pull from, which that's amazing. Like to be able to have people remember you when you spent, you know, what my window was maybe 10 years at the most on TV, and to have it be 20 years later and still people feel something when they see me, you know, people feel something. I bring back memories for people when I speak, and that's special. I don't think that'll ever be something people can do again for all the reasons that you've just stated. Like now it's saturated. But I caught a moment and I maximized it, and I'm super grateful for that. So I don't know that they're like favorite shows necessarily, but the overall time in my life was great because of my jobs, but behind the scenes it was super stressful. I had a lot of just like personal traumas going on and a lot of heavy stuff to deal with. And TV kind of provided an escape for me, honestly. And as much as it was good for other people to see me, it was good for me to be up there doing something productive and something, you know, good that was healthy, because I had a lot of things that were pulling me in other ways that were going on kind of in the background of all that. So TV was very pivotal, like, and helpful for me as well. It was really mutual, the help.
And then, you know, obviously, like, you know, everybody, a lot of people know about like your friendship with Aaliyah, you know, and how, you know, important and, you know, a person that she was to you and just to everybody in the world. Like, could you, you know, possibly speak to that a little bit?
You know, I can say generally, Aaliyah and I were friends. We started out as, you know, work friends, like everybody else. I mean, I knew everybody, literally. I got to meet everybody by nature of what I did. I interviewed most people. But she and I really just kind of connected on like some girl power shit almost, you know, like what? We would talk our kind of stuff, like hair. We would be in the makeup room talking about stuff together. We would talk about the kind of stuff that she wanted to do. And when we finally got like two-way pagers, I think I had one of the first ones and I was like trying to give them out. A friend of mine was the dude at Motorola who was doing it. So I was like, oh, give one to them and them, give me four more.
I had one at 16. So I was like, yeah, see.
You thought you was good. Hey,
that 99 2000, the SkyTel was just a whole nother.
Yes, that's exactly what I had. Yeah. Motorola SkyTel two-way. So
black or platinum before we move on?
Platinum.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to make sure.
All I had was the platinum.
I was so jealous that my brother had one. I didn't get on until the Chirps came out and
I just remember. I remember. Yeah, I was younger.
I was too young to get the two-way, man.
I remember Genuine did the song two-way. And then yes. I remember him saying, Black or Platinum, I got mine on Vibe. I'll get at you when I feel you. Like, that was the killer line right there. All right, you can continue.
That's exactly how it was.
I just had to get that off. Jason, you missed that moment. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I did. I know I did.
I was hot, Jason. Oh my God.
So, me
and Aaliyah, like, we meet everybody who had two ways was going back and forth on the two ways. So we would text on the two ways. She'd be like, hey, I'm in town. What you doing? It was, I don't know how people got it. People make up stuff. So I don't know. We weren't like best friends. I don't ever want to take a position that I didn't earn. Right. So we were cool. We weren't like inseparable, but every time I saw her, all it was love. And yeah. I spent a lot of time hanging out with her because we liked each other. Like, we had fun together. And, you know, at that time, that whole supportive sister and Black women helping each other wasn't a thing, but it was a thing if you were in this little kind of circle of women who were brown and doing their thing. Like, we all knew each other. And I remember one time me and her and Brandy hanging out, and it was always just love. So when she so what's crazy to me is that I always communicated with her on a two-way. The last time I talked to her was obviously on a two-way. It was a text. And then when I heard about her accident and her dying, was on a two-way. And so I have a love-hate relationship with the two-way, because I had a lot of crazy stuff happen through that freaking two-way. And at the same time, when 9/11 happened, I was one of the only people my friends could get in touch with, because all the phones were down, but the two-way was still working. So it was, that two-way was crazy. It spanned so many years of my life and had so many important and crazy things happen. That freaking two-way, man. I still have my two-way. I just wish I had a code to get into my two-way, because I can look at all my old messages.
Yeah, because you
wouldn't that be crazy to get to see what all the messages were?
You know what, though? Yeah. I don't want to see it, because mine consisted of me cheating on tests. I had
most people's consisted of that.
So twowaybeats.com. I spent most of the library time in the library downloading MIDI tones for my two-way. And then also I would be in class basically beaming girls my contact. Remember the beam?
That was like the pre-DM. That was like the DM.
So that's like the airdrop. That's basically like the airdrop. It's basically an airdrop. So, like, you know, me being able to do that, and like, it was so crazy, because what I learned was, like, if somebody's, you still could beam somebody if your phone, if it was turned off, if you didn't have no service too. Like, if you didn't have, like, if you didn't pay your bill, whatever, right?
Oh.
I'm 16, so I, you know, 16, 17 years old. I'm not even supposed to have this joint anyway. It's huge. It's on my hip, on my belt clip. You know, I'm just trying to be like a rapper. I'm tucking my jersey just so it can be seen. Like, I'm just cutting up. And I had the StarTech. You remember the StarTech? Motorola StarTech?
I don't remember StarTech.
So I'm really feeling like a rapper at this particular time. You know, but I had older homies, so, like, they put me on game, so... Just overall, Jason, if you beamed it too close, the ringtone would go fast. You wouldn't be able to, because you could send people ringtones.
Right.
And
what?
Yes,
I was doing
too much with that thing.
Deep into the two-way.
But I remember, and I don't want to get this person in trouble because he's married now, but but he took me to Jamaica Gold in L.A., and I was 17. I was 16. I wasn't even supposed to be in there. I had a fake ID. I had my first audios, but I had a two-way, and I got at this older woman with the two-way. And I didn't know how to act. I was puberty, my voice cracking and all kind of shit. And I'm seeing everything in there. Like, you know, I went back to school the next day, like, yo, being an adult is lit. Like, this is happening and this is happening. But I had the lady number. We hung out. I didn't even know how to, like, be on a date. It was crazy.
Oh, was my gosh.
Yeah.
How old was she, Trey? Was she like...
Bro, she was 28, bro. She was 28.
Wow!
Listen, she was 28. She worked for the school district, LA school district.
Robbing the cradle. And she had no idea. She thought she was 18.
Listen, I'm out here super frail.
You could have had that lady's job. You could have had that lady lost her job.
Just out here killer. You know what I'm saying? With the Izzy Miyake on. I was out here killer. So that's why
you doing way too much.
Hey, at 30, hey, I feel like a triple OG at 36 now, you know?
Right.
Let me tell you
who it backfires on that this conversation and all the stuff. I know I was doing way too much back then too. my child is the one that is losing because I'm such a helicopter mom. That boy can't do nothing. He's 10. I'll be in his text. He has a little iPad now. He has a little email that he can get. He can FaceTime and get text. He don't even know.
I got a love-hate relationship with helicopter mom because I was teaching. I got love-hate because I understand it. I understand it so much, but I just be like, let him breathe a little.
No,
a little.
He can't breathe. No.
Because you know how field trips and stuff and like people getting in the cars and all. And I get it because this world is obviously different than how we grew up. But I'd be like, man, like.
I'm one of those mothers that doesn't let him ride in other people's cars.
And listen, fair enough. You the person who's like, can I drive him to the field trip?
Right. I will chaperone.
Listen, I ain't got no problem with it, but I've dealt with helicopter parents and sometimes it's cool. And then sometimes it's like.
Sometimes it backfires.
Just chill. Yeah. I'm just saying from the teacher side of it. But I also understand because I'm not a parent. But if I happen to ever become a parent, maybe I can relate to it a little bit.
You could relate because this little person who can't do anything for themselves, who's helpless and defenseless, is mm-hmm. your responsibility to keep alive, right?
Like, yeah.
If you keep him alive to 10, you've done a great job. So my son is 10. He is alive. And I feel like I've done a good job.
But doing
this
amazing.
Is where it begins. Now he's a young Black man,
yeah.
right? Now he needs to understand how things are and how he needs to interact with things. He needs to understand he's not going to be perceived as a child anymore by other people. Mm-hmm. And so it's that era that to me now is even more important of a time.
So when you break that down,
because now I got to protect him.
I'm not mad at that. I'm not mad at that. When you break it down to that point, because again, I taught at an all white school. So it's it's a little different. But when you break it down, as far as a young Black boy leaving his house, no matter what, and how he's perceived in this world, that's a different layer to it. You know what I'm saying?
It is.
So,
and a very real one.
And it's hard to even say, all right, do this, do this, do this, do this, and you'll be fine. You could do everything right.
Yeah.
And it's still not work. Fine. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
so
right.
I totally get it. So do your thing, mama, literally.
He doesn't get to do anything unsupervised. That's it. And so if nobody can supervise him, he staying in the house. Cause guess what? I know you safe in here.
Right. So I got one last question for you, Ananda. Who was your favorite person or your favorite interview that you ever did?
Honestly, I did tens of thousands of interviews over my time on air. And I gotta say that my favorite person, I mean, I interviewed everybody, Hillary Clinton, Snoop, Puffy, Chris Rock, all the, you know, Cindy Crawford, I got to hang with Madonna, I did Whitney Houston TV, and Elmo. That's my favorite interview. Because Elmo sent me right back to 5 years old. I was like, oh my God. I don't even fan out on people. Like, right. You know what I mean? I lived this kind of fairy tale existence that I wasn't even aware of. It was just reality and just my reality at the time. I would go hang out with Prince every time he was in New York, he would call, or me and Aaliyah would have, like, I was hanging out with crazy, you know, famous people. People would lose their minds and it wasn't a big deal. We were, you know, peers. And so that was normal. But when Elmo showed up at the studio,
What was Prince like?
Oh, Prince was amazing. You know, it's interesting for me. I have a lot of stories with him and a lot of stories with Aaliyah, but both of them were really private people. And it's funny because someone just asked me to interview for this documentary about Prince, and I'm not going to do it because they were private people. I wouldn't have told stories about us when they were alive. And right. I'm not going to tell stories about us now that they're gone, because if they wouldn't have condoned it when they were here, there's nothing that makes me think it's okay just because they're not here.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm just a private, you know, person. And also for other people's stuff, I'm a vault. When people trust me with something, that's till I die. Like, I'm not going, oh, well, we ain't cool no more. Or you ain't here no more. And so now it's going to change. No, if I said I'm going to hold it, I'm going to hold it.
Here's our relatability. I'm a keeper of secrets.
I got a phrase for that. It's called, like, I seen it all, but I'll never tell.
Like, I'm really the keeper of secrets. Like, out of being in basketball, I done seen too much.
I know you have.
I done seen too much. And I got homies, they be like, hey, what? I can't even tell you this one, dog. I don't know what happened right there. You know what I mean? You just had to be there.
And we got to keep it generic. Like, I ain't going to tell you specific stuff, but I can tell. So I can tell you about Prince. He was as amazing in real life as he seemed like he was from a distance. He was phenomenal. And one of the people who I felt like was always my biggest like champion and biggest fan when we first met, he made a beeline to me. I don't remember what party I was at, but he apparently, I found out later, he came there because he heard I was there. And he walked straight up to me. He had all red on, this amazing outfit. And he put out his hand and he said, hi, I'm Prince. And you're the only reason I watch TV.
Wow.
He was a huge fan of Team Summit.
That's a bar.
And it was, and my stomach went, vroom, you know, like, what?
Yeah.
He really loved Teen Summit. It was an intelligent show. I got to showcase my intellect. And I mean, he loved it. And that was what started our friendship. And it really was a friendship that lasted, you know, decades. So, but that's all, you know, I had lots of experiences with him. But like you said, Trey, that's going down with me to the grave. I'm going to keep it.
Hey, I don't care. I don't care if we fall out, whatever. I ain't telling nothing.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, nah, for real.
Ain't never gonna get told by me.
No. So we got a question that we ask our guests at the end of the show. What advice would you give your 18-year-old self?
Buy Apple stock. And Amazon stock.
Hey, that's facts.
And invest in Bitcoin.
There you go. See? You go. Yes, yes. Because I'll be thinking about that shit all the time. I say, damn.
Let me tell you, everybody who says money can't buy happiness has either never been rich or has no experience with what happiness is really about. Because maybe it can't purchase it physically, because like the idea of happiness is what you're buying. You're not, you know, you can't like purchase a thing that's happiness. Yeah, but the reality is that having enough money to do whatever you want is definitely the environment my happiness is created in. It is not created in the broke ass environment of having to struggle and stress over extra $100 a month. Like, I've lived both sides of that. And I can tell you, I am happier when I have money. So it might not be able to buy the happiness, but I am certainly happier in the company of more money. And so the one thing I would tell myself at 18 isn't about, you know, oh, the heartbreak that I could avoid and the people. No. That all is going to happen as the nature of you being alive on the planet and living. You're going to experience heartbreak. You're going to experience failure. You're going to experience joy. You're going to experience success. None of that I would change. I would change the amount of money that I had access to, because that changes everything. You can help more people, you can do more good, you can influence the environment around you more, you can create experiences where you can find joy in more, and you can avoid the struggles that come with being broke more. And all of that leads to greater happiness for me. I don't care what anybody says. Broke people are the ones that talk about money not being able to buy happiness.
Amen.
So there that is.
And
fight me on it.
Is a wrap. You can drop the mic on that one. Yo, this has been an amazing show. I get it. That was great. This has been an amazing show. You've been an amazing guest.
Thank you guys.
No, thank you again for joining us. Thank you, Jason, for reaching out to her.
Yes, and being consistent. Jason was so consistent. He stayed on me. It took me I disappeared for a month. He was like, yo, remember what you said?
He knows. He knows, because, you know, I will be doing a million things. And if he can't reel me in, I'm like, so I emailed.
That's how I am.
And when we start emailing, I was like, okay, now I got to start following up. Because, you know, but I'm glad we did this. We definitely gonna talk about Oklahoma.
Let's go.
Yes.
So I'm gonna be following up with some facts soon.
I literally have an Indian card, Muskogee, Oklahoma, Creek Tribe. I'm
telling you.
If I move there, I would open a casino.
And I will pull up for sure.
See?
Well, this
thank you guys
great.
So much. And look, happy anniversary again. Everybody listening, keep watching. Follow the Growing Up the Same podcast. These young kings are doing amazing things. And, you know, I'm happy to support
you guys. Where can they find you on social media? if you want to be found. That's another thing.
Now it's okay.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Because the phone is a buffer.
No. Yes.
I'm on social media mainly only on IG. That's where I do most of what I do. I understand it better. I have a bigger following there. It's easier for me to use. It's seamless. Like, I love IG. So I'm at I'm Ananda Lewis is my IG tag. It's at I'm Ananda Lewis. And then I have an app called Elixir that's available on all platforms. And that's kind of like a nostalgic platform that I just created to have a place to put my stuff that I didn't want other sites to be able to take down. I wanted it to just be my own. And I have a workout club on there. I have nostalgic, you would love the vault, because there's all these old photos nobody's ever seen, stuff that I took myself from back then in that era we talked about. And also I had a photographer following me around for like 2 summers. And so I have pictures that nobody's ever seen. And then there's the fan mail that I got from MTV after I left. There's like 11 boxes of fan mail that no one ever opened. Well, that I definitely didn't open, and I never got to read. So I'm opening that mail now 20 years later. And I might track down some of these people that sent me letters back then that I never responded to.
Hey, that's fire.
Yeah.
That
so all of that fire. Is on the app. Yeah,
I can't wait to check it out. I'm definitely going to check it out, and I'll blast that out. So,
again, and it's Elixir with an A, A-L-I-X-I-R.
Thank you. That's helpful. We'll be typing all the shit in.
And it'll ask you, will you spell it with an E? It'll be like, are you sure you don't want to spell it with an E? Like, no, I'm sure. It's A-L-I-X-I-R.
All right. Well, thank you again. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you, guys. So nice to meet you and talk to you, and continued success.
Growing up the same wins the game!